Very lost in our lectures and seminars from Professor Parvati Reddy. I've been speaking to us at great length on a range of traditions in the South, on temples, on architecture, and on theology, and is speaking to us today about the Nath Siddhas and Hatha Yoga practices in South India. We're extremely pleased to have Professor Reddy here. Sad to see her go, and we're excited to hear her talk. Please,
thank you for your kind words. I don't give you any more trouble. This is my last lecture. So thank you all for coming for this lecture. Actually, this is a continuation of my second lecture that was a Shaiva Shakta traditions and the Sri Shailam Prakara. That is going to be one or two chapters in my book on Siddhas and Naths and, you know, Tantra and Yoga practices in South India. So this is going to be one chapter on the Naths. So it's still in progress. Even today I was translating some of the passages. So they are very rough, you know, like a traps, you know. But some sections are developed in depth, that because I have been working on those sections for quite some time. What I will do, I have here 30 pages or 25 pages of paper. It's difficult to read everything. So I read some sections and sometimes I show in between the slides or sometimes I summarize the stories. It is impossible to read all the stories of nine Naths, especially they have so many, each one has several janmas, you know, births, so it takes a long time. So I kind of brief on that, you know, sometimes. So that's the kind of format I'm following. So Natha Siddhas, Tantra and Yoga Practices in South India. I changed a little bit title also. Yeah, before that, Natha Siddhas and Hatha Yoga Practices, I put it. Then I realized that Natha Siddhas, this is the tradition after all developed within the Shaiva Shakta cultural milieu of this region, Sri Shailam and Southern Andhra. So it is appropriate to say, and also not only just Hatha Yoga, there are different types of yoga practiced. So it is wise to, I mean, better to say yoga, you know, more broader. So that's why I changed the title. I will read just one and a half page introduction and then I will go into the Nath stories. Sri Shailam in the southern region of Andhra Pradesh in South India had played a significant role in the development of Siddha and ascetic traditions belonging to the Shaiva Shakta communities between the 10th and the 16th centuries. Textual and archaeological sources demonstrate that Mount Sri Shailam became a banyan tree, which I called in my conclusion of the previous, I mean, in the book, Hindu Pilgrimage, I called Sri Shailam as a banyan tree, because for Shaivism, not only because it drew the admiration of diverse religious communities, including the Shaiva Siddhantins of Central India and Tamil region, the Veera Shaiva mystic poets of Karnataka, the Shaiva religious teachers and tantric ascetics of Andhra, and the Natha Siddhas of North India, but also fostered a pluralistic religious culture. And the pilgrimage center has become an active center for the growth of different Siddha groups, such as Saiva Siddhas, Natha Siddhas, and Rasa Siddhas. The Siddha tradition in general and the Natha Panth developed within the cultural milieu of Saiva and Shakta tantric religious communities of India. So I will begin with a brief introduction to general features of Tantrism, then move on to the Naths. Since its inception on Indian soil around 5th century CE, Tantra has developed into a major tradition with a new set of doctrinal beliefs and practices that have not only placed significance on desire, karma, but have also claimed that desire need not to be sacrificed to achieve liberation. Furthermore, Tantrikas put forward soteriological goals to gain both worldly and supernatural enjoyments, that is, bhakti and powers, siddhis, as well as liberation in this life, jivan mukti. To achieve these goals, they have conceived and conceptualized cosmic force or absolute microcosm, which is as the concrete manifestation of divine energy of Godhead, which is also present in human being, that is microcosm, in creative and emancipatory ways. They have promoted the exteriorization rituals through body-related practices and the historic mystical physiology through the subtle body of energy system chakras to obtain either supernatural powers and to achieve God consciousness. The radical perception of Tantra using body and worldly desires to achieve liberation places it strikingly on the opposite spectrum of Hindu orthodoxy and philosophical traditions, where emphasis is placed on relinquishing both the body and desires to achieve liberation from the cycle of samsara, which is that liberation is paramukti. Though as radical it sounds, tantric ideologies, ritual liturgies, methods of practices and salvation goals have influenced many Hindu traditions, including Siddha communities, as well as Buddhists and Jains across India, Nepal, Tibet and Sri Lanka. Srisailam presents an excellent example of the way the North tradition and its practices had developed within the context of Shaiva Shakta cultural environment. This seminar explores the five facets of North religious culture, including 1. The historical account of 9 North Siddhas based on the Navanatha Charitra and the art narratives of Prakara, Srisailam temple Prakara. And the 2nd, the Kundalini based yoga techniques and Hatha yoga practices or yoga practices practiced by the North Gurus. 3rd, the Yogini Kaula cult of Yogini Kala Kula or Yogini Kaula cultic practices. 4th, the placement of Srisailam's North religious culture within the broader context of Siddha traditions. So this sounds like a perfect objectives, very quite a lot. For a book, actually I aimed to achieve these objectives for a book, but for this seminar I think I will focus on a few aspects of the objectives. I will focus in depth. So recently scholarship has grown on North tradition with a lot of Sanskrit texts translated, with the critical editions and translation by James Mallison is here, and Chaba Kiss and many others, they translated, and also, secondary literature also quite, volumes, edited volumes have been brought out. So it's a quite, impressive in the past 20 years, North tradition, in general, and Siddha traditions, especially David White, scholars like that, they have contributed quite, So it's for people like me now begin to study, and for us they made life easier a little bit, otherwise it would have been difficult. There are a list of texts I'm using, but today I'm focusing on Navanatha Charitra Telugu text dated to 14th or 15th century. I am also using some passages from the Sanskrit Srisaila Khanda of the Skanda Purana and 13th century Sanskrit Saiva Varga Machendra Samhita. A lot I found. Thank you, James, for sharing that. And Kechar Vidya of Adinatha and 15th century Atayoga Pradipika. And many Telugu works like 16th century Pingal Surana Kalapurna, then they have a lot of few chapters here and there talking about they are making a visit to Srisailam, and there are yoginis, or female. They are experts in, and one yogini in this Kalapurna, she gives a talk on Patanjali Yoga. Primarily she is talking about Ashtanga Yoga, 8 limbs of Patanjali Yoga. So it's very quite impressive. And so I will be more looking into Telugu dramas and literary works, as time goes on. And in addition to textual sources, again, there are archaeological abundant, Prakara reliefs itself work for us. Very extraordinary source for us to match or to map the, what was said in the texts and to the visual narratives. And also there are matas, Ganta Mata, Vibhuti, Sarangadhara Mata, and I strongly believe at least these three might have belonged to Naths or maybe taken over by Mas, or Ganta Mata is the earliest one, might belong to Siddhas actually. So not necessarily we have to call, North tradition developed later, but Siddha cult was there for a long time in Srisailam. So I will be talking more about that later on. And we do have art historical sources from other sources. So now we look at these 9 Naths and Navanatha Charitra. So, by the mid-15th century, the North lineage of Siddhas have emerged as the influential teachers and wonder-working yogis in Telugu-speaking region of South India. The 15th century Telugu work, the Navanath Charitra of Gavarana, is a compilation of the history of 9 Nath teachers, with the stories tracing to the origins of Nath Sampradaya and Shiva as the Adi, the first teacher of Shaiva Tantra and Yoga Shastras. The Navanath Charitra is not only the first work to contain a list of 9 Naths corresponding to those found in later Nath literature in North India, but also expounds the formation of a regional Nath Sampradaya lineage of gurus and the development of Shaiva Tantra and Yoga practices within the cultural milieu of Sri Shailam and its environs. The NC is a Shaiva work, and the author Gavarana seemed to be the follower of Veerashaivism, which is proven that he wrote the history of Naths at the consent of Muktisanta Bhiksha Vruttiraya, the head of the Veerashaiva monastery, come local ruler of Sri Shailam region. Gavarana also states that there was a Srigiri Kavi or poet who wrote a work on Naths, and his patron Muktisanta asked him to write promote the extraordinarily yoga educated and meritorious teachings of the 9 Naths in the Dvipada Deshi style. That means there was already a work on the Naths written before the Gavarana. And so he, Gavarana, even he mentions in the text, there was a text, and this Shanta Bhikshavruti asked me to rewrite for common people, not in a poetic style, but Dvipada, like in a popular style in Telugu, Deshi style. So, so that means that there was already Nath tradition might have existed late 13th. I would say early 14th century. Even the date of Nagavarana is given a range of by Telugu literary scholars, 1360 to 1460. So it is a range, you know, that we can, you know, think of, you know, in between those, like, you know, maybe 14th. So that's why it may not be necessarily mid 15th century, give and take couple of decades, you know, back and forth, maybe earlier. And they have this kind of, using the terminology, a translator, extraordinarily yoga educated. They have this vision in the minds of this Veerashaiva, even Mathadipati is saying that, and meritorious teachings, punya vachanas, I mean, that's what in English when we translate, punya pravartanal, you know. So, anyway, the Nath tradition of 9 gurus were known to Sri Shailam probably, okay, now that is done. NC contains 5 long chapters, each with several sections, and the early part of the first chapter begins in Puranic style with a description of courtly setting of Shiva and Parvati on Kailasha, and followed by their spring pastime activities. It's such a typical Purana style. Then the rest of the first chapter unfolds the events of Shiva's teachings to Parvati during their sea voyage, the birth of narrative of Meenanatha, and the transmission of Shaiva and yoga teachings to the Meenanatha. So the chapters, the second, chapter 2, 3 and 4 contain the stories of other Nath yogis, the procedures of initiation, Diksha and the transmission of teachings from Goraksha to other initiated Nath gurus. The chapter 5 contains different topics, Meenanatha sending off his disciples for propagation of Nath teachings and the development of Nath Parampara, Goraksha's visit to Sri Shailam, debate between Goraksha and Allama Prabhu, Nagarjuna's disciple, who had experimented here, Rasa Siddha enters Sri Shailam. Siddha Nagarjuna and his student were, you know, said to have experimented to make the Sri Shailam mountain to transform into a golden mountain. But that did not go through, you know. So anyway, that's where we see the Rasa Siddhas also, Rasaratnakara and, Ananda Kanda, they talk about, you know, Rasa Siddhas and their activities at Sri Shailam. So from the text, that's what we get. Now Meenanatha, alternatively he is called Machendra. Gopala, that is second teacher, and he, when he is initiated, he was given the name Goraksha. Chaurangi, his original name was Sarangadra. He's a king. And Chaurangi, he got the name. And so, Meghanatha, Virupaksha, Nagarjuna, Kanika, Manjunatha, Buddha Siddha. But David White gives in his alchemical Siddhas, his work, a list of Naths from another regions as well. He includes Nath Charitra list as well. But he uses a different edition of Nath Charitra, Navanath Charitra. So, slightly different. But the most of the time, the names also can be different when compared to Bengal, Maharashtra, Punjab lists. And also stories can be various. I mean, so many legends developed around these Nath yogis. Even in Andhra, different legends are there. So you can imagine in other regions, you know, as well, so many different versions. So now the so although the NC presents Meenanatha as the protagonist in the role as the first teacher of Nath tradition, it however portrays Goraksha as the real hero who not only rescued his teacher Meenanath from the Kadali kingdom of women, also served as the front runner in the initiation of other Nath gurus and the transmission of yoga teachings and practices. So throughout the text that you, we feel that every time there is a new person is initiated into the order, he always asks, calls upon the Goraksha and please initiate him and bring him back. And then he gives the name. It's a typical pattern. Only one time except he gives a chance to Nagarjuna to initiate Kanika, you know. That's the only one rare, but otherwise all the gurus are initiated by the Goraksha, Gopala. Machindranath is much revered in many literary traditions from Punjab, Western India, Eastern India, Nepal, and as well as, of course, in Puranas and other literary works. Though the story of Machindranath appears in different versions, but the core features of narrative remains the same in the regional literary traditions. The regional variants differ on the names of Naths and narrative descriptions. The main idea that Machindranath as a boy being trapped inside of a womb of a fish and overheard when Shiva was expounding the teachings of Kaulamarga and yoga secrets has been the consistent in all versions. And I translated, it's a big passage from the Nath Chaitra. So I will kind of summarize this one. So here, compared to, yes, Machindranath heard the teachings from Shiva, from a womb of a fish, when Shiva and Parvati were on sea voyage. But here, Navanath Charitra, he introduces new, it is Shiva's Retas was fell into the water, and that was swallowed by the fish, and Machindra was born from the fish. That is something new feature in the, I found in the, in Navanath Charitra. And when compared to, I mean, I compared to versions in the Kaulaginana Nirnaya, another earliest text, and also Machendra Samhita. Here almost Machendra is deified as almost a son of Shiva. And compared to Machendra Samhita, Machendra is described as a fisherman. He receives a secret mantra from Shaiva Brahmins who were doing a ritual on the banks of some river, and he asked them, and they taught him the secrets of the mantra and the japa, and so he promised him not to reveal that. That's the way it started. But eventually, in the middle of the narrative, he heard Shiva's teachings from the womb of fish. So it's like something, some details can vary, you know, from version to another, one version to another version. But I didn't find in Navanath Charitra one thing is it's supposed to be, these teachings are supposed to be to Parvati. So, but, you know, he overheard, and in some other versions, he was given curse by Shiva that you will forget one day all these teachings of what you did. But I didn't find that in Navanath Charitra. So that is the one another. That is the way given explanation later on why he goes to Kadalivana forest and he forgets all his losses, yoga teachings and all that, you know, explanation. But here, Navanath Charitra, I didn't find that one. He was given and he was pleased. Shiva learned that, you know, the Meenanatha was born. And he gave all these wonderful, what Parvati asked in a way, spiritual knowledge of four yogas, procedures of practices, religious teachings, and other details are there, you know, certain details. So Shiva have had Mennatha Siddhasana posture and taught all the yogas, including Raja Yoga and the procedure of so-called Machendra's Drushti, that is yogic gazing, such as of the tip of a nose, or Nasagra Drushti. It says Nasagra Drushti, and all related arguments made related to the tantric knowledge, all mantras, all genuine gems, all medicinal herbs. So everything, Shankara blessed his son to become the great guru among all siddhas, and he would be known by the name of Meenanatha since he was born from the fish. That's why every time Machendra also, when he naming his new initiate, he thinks always is based on his birth, you know, gives a suitable name, you know. Anyway, later on he wanders to different places settle downs. We are given clues. Settle downs on the in Mandatapura, in the Malwa region, present Gujarat. That's where he finally settled down. So after his pilgrimage, wandering to all the places and etc. So he want to hide, you know. He always searches for a nice cave. That's why Srishailam attracted, I think. I understood later on, you know, a lot of beautiful caves. He always looks like a broad cave, nice and with the vegetation, so he always want to hide from others. That kind of sense I get it. So he secludedly started his yoga practice, and this Gopala, the cowherd actually, who is the caretaker of Malwa king Rajamahendra. He was caretaker of cattle. Okay, so he comes around and he ended up seeing the Machendranath in the cave, and he was astonished, and Meenanatha was also surprised. And so these local people know the yogis, they honor also even today, you know, local areas. So he was so much drawn, Gopala, and he started bringing every day a vessel of milk to Machendra. So that is the way kind of he served him, very faithfully, very humbly, and that impressed him so much, you know, a simple task, but he kind of seen such a kind of faithful follower in Gopala. Now this happens and went on, and then Sarangadhara story comes in, you know. Sarangadhara was a prince of a king, and again, it's a long story, he was a very handsome prince, and he's supposed to marry a princess, and that princess actually loved him, and all the story to make it short. And Sarangadhara says he has another girlfriend. He loved another one, so he can't marry the another princess. And they kind of tricked, and the old king marries actually the young princess. Okay. And the young princess got revenge, and then one day when the king was on hunting expedition, there was something going on, play sport, like, birds they play, and Sarangadhara was doing this, a game, kind of pastime game, and the bird went into Chitrangi's place. The Chitrangi, the stepmother, basically, she tries to woo him, and, you know, say, and all kinds of things, and ask him make love to her, and he says that's wrong, and all those that happens, and get out of the palace. And she told, after king came, and she told that, you know, Sarangadhara was the one who actually came after her, and so you should punish him. And the minister suggested only throw him in the forest and cut off his limbs, you know. What a punishment. So that's what they did, you know, in the Sarangadhara. I will show you narratives in a minute. He was shouting and out of pain and all that, and the Gopala is the one drawn to that and heard, and went back to the Machendra. My can help this wounded prince, and Somachandra came, and that is the way their encounter with the Sarangadhara, and they took him back to the cave, and he was nourished, and he was the one actually second initiated Nath Guru actually, technically, you know, but he got into trouble later on, you know, so that is another story. So, I will read what technique he used. He gave this yoga technique he used to cure Chaurangi to get his limbs back, you know. So Sarangadhara was restored and eventually became Machandana's disciple. He is called Chaurangi-Nath in the Natha tradition. And I will stop there, I think, because they have long stories. Meghanatha was the son of Brahmin's prince. I will just say a Brahmin couple, so, son of a Brahmin couple. His father was killed by a tiger, and mother is could not bear the, you know, separation from the husband. She was ready to do even sati. That was surprising to me. She insisted she wanted to go on sati. That's what she performed too. And the boy was left out. This is Meghanatha, you know. And there was another king, Virupaksha actually, local ruler perhaps. And so they encounter Machandranath, and he tells the story. And the boy, what shall we do with the boy? Then he, Machandranath says, we will initiate him into the tradition. So that's the way Meghanatha came, because he was born to the, you know, making the sound of the cloud of a mega, sound of a mega. There was raining and, you know, torrential rain and a lot of clouds and thunderstorms, and so he was born. So this is the way he gives the names, you know, Meghanatha. Virupaksha has a long story, has several births he undergo for whatever the reasons. It's all, again, these stories are very unique and unusual circumstances. They underwent a lot of problems in their lives, and in a difficult situation they encounter Machandra or Gopala, you know, and naturally they were kind of initiated into the order. Virupaksha is a king again, you know. So we have two kings already, you know, Chaurangi and Virupaksha. And Nagarjuna also king. And when Nagarjuna came, that Machandra was hesitant to initiate him, because he was not sure for some reason. Why do you want, you are a king, why can't we enjoy the royal life? Why do you need this yoga tattva, you know, kind of, you know, comic way he says to Nagarjuna. But anyway, Nagarjuna says, I am fed up with royal life. I want to become a yogi. So that's the way it goes on. I mean, I'm just colloquial language I'm saying to you. I mean, govern a word little more literary way. So anyway, now the Kanika is the one only muni, a sage. He does all the old pastime, like our, you know, old time practices, like, you know, sitting in the midst of five fires, doing in the summer, and taking a bath in the cold winters, and staying in the water, cold water, all these old ascetic practices. So he is a muni. He did something wrong, for as a repentance he has been doing this, you know. And then, you know, he comes to Machandra, and I want to, you know, please initiate me. So I will talk about little more Kanika later on. And the Manjunatha is the son of Machandra. When he was Kadali Raja, he had this son with the chief queen of that dead king, and Manjunatha the boy. And later on, when he came out of that whole Kadali Raja business, I call. I'm making a little more comically. Then Goraksha asks, because actually Goraksha kills. This is one thing, it appears in all the stories. He kills the boy because Machandra was so much attached to the boy. I had this boy, this beautiful, he's a handsome boy, and so much. This so to, you know, basically to develop a detachment, he kills the boy. And then Machandra was heartbroken, and then, so anyway, I will revive your boy only when you come out of back to our yoga order. he kind of, you know, and then, you know, finally the boy was revived. And after that he asked, what do we do with this boy? Then he says, since he was born to me, initiate into the order, which is a small boy. They don't do any other other things like. But this time he asked him, make him Kurmasana. All are, initiated, Siddhasana, starting with the Siddhasana. But Manjunatha, for some reason, he says Kurmasana. I don't know why. Not much teaching went into Manjunatha, but, and then finally Buddha Siddha. Buddha Siddha was the minister of that dead king in whose body Machendra lived, for some time, and enjoyed the royal life. But Buddha Siddha, the minister before the name, he got this name, he knew the, secret when he knew the king was dead and some yogi entered. I think he has some knowledge, about this kind of Parakaya Pravesha, entering into foreign bodies. So he knew that, but he kept the secret. For that, Machendra was very thankful later on. You kept the secret, you have been faithful and finally he was also initiated into the order. So that was the ninth guru of Buddha Siddha. He was given Buddha Siddha name. So let's see, that's the historical very brief account of. So we are visiting now temple Prakara enclosure. That's what it looks like. It's a enclosure around the temple complex, basically. It's a typical South Indian temple feature. And this is about by 500 by 600 feet long. As well as same, north to south and east to west, same. So all the outer Prakara was carved with the reliefs, not just knots, but all the Purana stories, religious history, all the religious orders, you name it, So it took me almost 3 months to document all these leaves. I really stationed there and 10 hours I worked and I, in a sequence, I documented all these large, the Indian papers, the papers, the graphic papers. So I kind of wrote all the 10 layers and wrote and so anyway, that is the Prakara. And so we are going to trace the, all these Nath, figures. Here, on the east face, we see the Machendra Nath. You can see on the fish identified seated posture. That's a typical posture always you see in Machendra. And opposite to him is the, I feel like a Goraksha because both are, very important figures. But I don't know Goraksha's seated on like a scorpion. That I'm not sure. I'm searching for which Siddha sat on the, poison. I mean, both ways. I mean, the scorpion is a control, is controlling. You see, you can see that is one of the Siddhis. And sometimes they control in the panels, serpents, snakes, they come and they say like this, the snakes stop there. Sometimes the tigers are sat near them, taming the, that's what compared to taming the tiger is like taming the one's own mind, Here you see some features, I will just read, seated on a fish, Machendra Nath draws left leg closer to his right thigh and his right leg is firmly placed over the ground, extends his left arm over resting over a yoga danda. Always used yoga danda, many, many figures, and places his right hand straight down over the fish's tail. His head tilts to the left, and his air radiates like a nimbus. Usually in the Kapalika iconography, that is a typical there, Bhairava, you see more this, fiery kind of, hairstyle. Here you can see he wears a long ear ornament, a necklace, ornaments, etc., etc. So meditating yogi seated on a scorpion, the other meditating yogi is similar to Machendra's posture, except it is reversed. So, that's the, we'll go to the story of Machendra. So here on the south face, the entire southern section, pretty much a large section of the south face, second half of the south face dedicated to the Nath story. So basically, the artist is matching the Gauranath's Navanatha Charitra. I mean, as I can see. So here on the left, sea voyage and showing Parvati, there are fishes and etc. the story. And then in the next left panel, you see the Machendra comes out of the fish and stands and explains. And now prostrating like a prayer, offering a prayer. So that is the, it is not a very high artistic style. This is a kind of local style, Vijayanagara dynasty, but local style. But style is not important here for us. Iconology is important. Religious history is important for us, you know. So that is the, that's why it's a very simple art. And you see the Gopala encounter, Gopala story, Gopala's encounter with Machindranath in a cave. And you can see now he's at yoga posture with the yoga banda, yoga band. And he is having a conversation. And then on the right, he is brought milk to him, you know. So that continues for some time, you know. And then this is the Sarangadhara. Next story, Sarangadhara is depicted almost 6-7 panels. But I got it here, three major ones. So you can see the severe limbs, the Sarangadhara fell in the middle, in the center, on the ground. And the Gopala, as you can see, left. Typically, the cowherds, you know, they wear this long, you know, shawl kind of over their head, you know. So showing the Machindranath. And they brought him back to the cave, and the curing and teaching started. Maybe I will read that part. And so since we have here, I mean, the narrative, Meenanada was sympathetic to Sarangadhara, and the prince was made to lie on a makeshift bed in the cave and was nourished by the milk brought by Gopala daily. Meenanada decided to teach the prince spiritual knowledge. That's what they use, adhyatmika vigno vidyopadesha. They use, like, you know, vidya. We can't say just education. It's not, you know, it's more than that. So the prince was helped to sit in Siddhasana posture and was taught. Here he uses the words Anuturiya Yoga. He taught Anuturiya Yoga, and it's a limbs of knowledge maybe, and it's a ganas or groups of deities, devatala ganambulu. And then while this is happening, he also intensely meditated on Gurunatha's teachings in his mind. He asked Sarangadhara to meditate on the Gurunatha's teachings in his mind. And slowly, over time, he became an expert and had recovered from... He also gave Ayurvedic, some kind of herbal therapeutic methods. So, yoga aushada, aushada kyambulu, yoga aushada kyambulu, Ayurvedic yoga therapeutic methods I brought like that. So he was cured both and yoga and as time has passed, the principal yogi realized that Sarangadhara was ready for yoga samadhi and also decided to bless the king's son with the gift of hands and feet that he had lost. Meenanatha had taught Sarangadhara how to develop steadily the technique of upward focus grace, Urdhava Drushti, in one direction without moving and directing his gaze to his Atma, maybe directing his gaze towards his own Atma, self. It was not clear, but it says this is the Rachuli Yoga. So Anuturiya Yoga, Rachuli Yoga, the two words are used here. Taught to the prince, and as he practiced, he had got back his feet and hands eventually. The guru made the prince to walk in his own cave and had graced the disciple with all siddhi powers and named him Chaurangi, since he had got back his feet and hands miraculously. So happens to Sarangadhara. And the bottom queen and king and queen lamenting over the cruel fate of their son. But that face occurred actually due to the father, you know. These visual narratives are depicted. After that, this appears. A king portrait, a king like a pose, you can see on the throne. And he is attended by all these rows of procession, you know, all the people and all other different kinds of things happening, including wrestling and sports, things like that. So it's like a royal procession. And that is a detail of a king. So Longhurst, archaeologist, he visited Srisailam in 1914 And he wrote, that was his first, I mean, that was the first article, you know, like an archaeological report he did. And he identified this king to Krishnadevaraya. Krishnadevaraya is the most popular and famous king of Vijayanagara dynasty. Because there were inscriptions, 1512, 1515, there are several inscriptions. Maybe he thought that it was the Krishnadevaraya's patronage, and you know, this figure attributed to Krishnadevaraya. But when we compare to Krishnadevaraya statues actually in Vijayanagara or in Tirupati, bronze statues, very different. He is not a Shaivite, he is a Vaishnava. That's the Shaivite hairstyle. Veerashaiva especially, they tied hair like that. And they always, and he is also, left hand is holding like this. And for some time I was like thinking about what it is. Maybe he is a Veerashaiva. Veerashaivas put the linga here. They wear the linga around the necks. And then during the worship, they put the linga here. They offer all the worship, and after that they put it back in the casket. So that's what I'm thinking, you know. So he is a, since Shanta Bhiksha, Mukti Shanta Bhiksha Avruti is such a prominent ruler, and he also commissioned these poetic works, Gaurana and other famous author, poet Srinatha from this period and from this region, who also wrote Sri Shivaratri Mahatmya at the advice of Shanta Bhiksha Avruti. And moreover, there are inscriptions. They kind of described like a self-appointed local rulers of Sri Shailam, almost like Mahamandaladishwara, like, you know, royal titles. So I thought that maybe he is the one, Mukti Shanta Bhiksharuti, could be this king poetrate. And another second alternative is Reddy kings. There was a Reddy dynasty. They ruled eastern coastal Andhra, including Sri Shailam, for almost 125 years. They were patrons of Veerashaivas and patrons of Natha tradition. They do have the gurus with whom they took the Diksha. So, alternatively, but first, my first thing is the Mukti Shanta Bhiksha Avruti I am kind of settling down with. In addition to what we have, the other archaeological sources, Sarangadhara Mata, there is a Mata. It could be a Shaiva Mata was existed, might have taken over during the period when knots were prominent and named after Sarangadhara. It happens, you know, in other Mata cases, in other cases that happened. So still there is some worship is going on, and I am kind of, there is a 13th century inscription there, 13th or early 14th century inscription. So that's the historical survey of, brief historical survey of Siddhas, and I talked about in my second lecture actually Shaiva Tantra and Shakta a little bit, the transitions from Kulamarga to Kaula, Kaula Yogini, and how it is, and also how Durga tradition also changed from Vamachara Tantra to Shakta Mahadevi tradition to later on Sri Vidya, how the transition did take place. I talked about that. Here today I talked about this image, but today I kind of, in the context of knots also it applies. This is a tantric relief I called in my book, and there is a description. But why I am showing this is, you can see that it's a composite figure. It's a combination of animal head. What was we were thinking about last time? The head? I think we forgot. I forgot too. The head looks like a goat or head looks like what?
Antelope.
Antelope, yes. Antelope, yes. Yeah. I forgot. Antelope, and she's a goddess, you can see. Lion body. I'm just briefing because we don't have much time. So, all important is all the things are touched, whatever the religious history, the symbols convey the religious history. The skulls represents the, what is symbols of Kapalika, long, this center, this tradition, this long, center has a long history of Kapalikas. And then the fish, Machendranath, suckling the, you know, milk from the lion. You can see I talked about this, looping around the snake, looping around the back of the, goddess, almost touching to the skull. That's why I call that is the Kundalini, a symbol of Kundalini, ascending Kundalini Shakti from the back to, all the way upwards. So if you want a description, I mean, it's there here in this, book I gave the description. So, we don't have much time. So now the practices, different kinds of practices, mental worship or meditation practices, focusing on a object, developing this concentration, Siddha meditating on object on the left and right. I was really surprised to find her, Karakkayal Ammayar, Nayanar, one of the 64 Nayanar saints, actually woman saint. She was ordained devotee of Shiva. I think she came to Sri Shailam, obviously, or Sri Shailam artists know, I don't know, either way. So you can see that she is always shown as a skeletal body. So she is also focusing. She made me think of like a Shambhava kind of, if you have any, suggestions, your suggestions are welcome. So, Shambhava kind of future is going on, Shambhava cultic practice, or I am not sure. Our hair also always disheveled like a Kapalika type kind of ish. Different postures of meditating yogis. You find so many varieties. It's not like a monotonous kind of, somebody wrote, the monotonous. No, it's not true. You can see that each one is different. Maybe sometimes Siddhasana, sometimes Ardha Padmasana, half lotus posture. Only rarely the standing posture, this one and a few others I found. Most of them are seated postures. Look at the bottom one, how he was like, yogi. Asana, more asana postures, and yoga meditation, Kukutasana, cock or rooster posture, Ardha Padmasana, I'm thinking, I don't know, is it half lotus? And definitely he is meditating, his hands you can see. Mantra. So it is difficult to what yoga practice they are doing, mantra yoga or, what yoga, it's sometimes difficult to say concretely. What do you think of the right one? What posture is that? It's the most popular posture on Sri Shailam wall. So many, there are other portraits in the similar posture like that. It's like a swing body,
There are lots at Hampi as well with this, using this Yoga Danda.
Like
they're never described in texts. There's no textual descriptions of asanas using this Yoga Danda at all. So, can't provide any textual background.
And use of yantras, mandalas, deity images in meditation. You find quite a few. I selected a few here. Lotus, eight petal lotus yantra. Sometimes the center one is more for me curious. They are like a very old time ascetic order, their dress, he is holding a trishula trident. And the woman looks like a yogini, almost female figure. She is also yoga danda and she is holding kundi part left. And you can see the yantra motif there. And on the other four petal lotus yantra. So there are few others, they have lotus. This mental worship, deity visualization, it was there in Saiva Siddhanta. I talked about in my Hindu pilgrimage book. The next slide is what Saiva Siddhanta's meditating yogis. You can see top freeze, yogis almost bending towards the central panel down, the five-faced Sadashiva. This is typically Saiva Siddhanta was practiced and for 13th and 12th-13th centuries, and they based on the Saiva Siddhanta theology, they constructed this lotus pilgrimage, exterior journey. So they basically made journey between Sri Shailam and other eight gateways. They constructed basically a lotus mandala of Sri Shailam, Kshetra Mandala basically. So they traveled every time to the Mallikarjuna Shiva center and one petal journey, and then came back to second petal. Like that they repeated every time they went to the center, worshipping him and going back. So this is the way. It's a long time. It might have taken them like 1 year by the time they finished the. But they also, there is also internal journey. I talked about the I don't have time, but it's a Parvata sage, how he did interior journey on page 75, 76, I translated some passages from Sri Shailakanda. He basically visualizes the eight forms of the Sadashiva in his mind and welcomes him and offers him, visualizes him. He is seated on the throne and he worships basically internal worship. So internalization of Lotus Mandala pilgrimage, basically. Yeah. So, but you can see that lotus motifs there, and so that's the more and more yogis, you can see different, but most of them are like seated. The right bottom, it is that Garbhasthasana. I'm trying to match that 84 asanas, the she did a book on the, but it's very difficult, very difficult to match those or. And because it is always like Garbha womb, like close at the end, and then sometimes they place like this or sometimes like this. So, but legs position is same. And so I thought Garbhasthasana. So because of long history, the Srishailam has from Kapalikas to Kalamukas to and Shaiva Siddhanta, Veera Shaiva, and the Shaiva Shakta interactions as a part of that, the Kula Marga, the Kula deities, Kula path deities, basically ferocious forms of female deities are worshipped, and that comes from like Malati Madhava Sanskrit sources and as well as Telugu sources. And so, but this is the earliest sculpture that I found, Srishailam, Saptamatrukas or Seven Mothers, dated roughly like a 7th century or, you know, 8th century cannot be, but 11th, 7th century, something like that. Somewhere I read Saptamatrukas eventually cult went, developed into the Kaula, Yogini Kaula or Yogini cult into and then later on, Yogini Kaula was identified with Machendranath later on. So it's like several shifts did take place. Because of the all other deities, Bhairava, Veerabhadra, Veerabhadra and Bhadrakali, very popular cult here in this region. And Bhairava is the most honored deity. That the right one comes from the north face. I'm calling him Samhara Bhairava. At the end of the dissolution, all everything dissolved. He's standing there, embodying the entire, you know, the cremated or the dissolved world on his body. You know, all the figures you can see standing on the serpent. So something like a Kalagni Rudra or, you know, Bhairava. So definitely there is no doubt. I mean, all the Prakara, around the Prakara, there are 8 Bhairavas. Astabhairava cult was there. Bhairava along with Durga was worshipped. And we do have a lot of references to that. They used to do offering limbs or blood believing in that they will become Durga or Sadashiva, you know. And we do have inscription. That was from the Veerashaivas. They believed cutting off their heads. Veerashaivas known to be, you know, cutting off their heads, you know. That's why they are called heroic Veera, heroic Shaivas. And there is an inscription, you know. Durga story but in this context, why Durga? This is a old picture before 1960s. If you go to Srishailam now, you don't see the frontal mandapa is completely renovated. A new mandapa is created. You don't see this. But here you can see the Mahishasura Mardini, down there bottom. There is a Balipita, huge Balipita. So definitely there were animal sacrifices were done for a long time until 1970s, and that was banned later on. And Mata Manakeshwari, there is this woman saint, she protested in front of the temple against this, you know, animal sacrifices. So that also contributed, and by all means, government of Andhra Pradesh also banned. She was associated to begin with old time word Vamachara, Tantric Vamachara, left hand practices, animal sacrifices and Kaula practices, 5 mass. I don't need to go details that. But so she was associated with that. That was her original picture actually. you know, the left, you know, paint, that is the painting of, you know, original statue. But you don't see that when you go to Srishailam. You see the right picture. That is the way they covered up. And she is now Brahmaramba, Mother Bee, you know, she's called. And the Sanskrit Srishaila Kanda has a whole 15 chapters devoted to this whole, you know, like a Devi Mahatmya chapters, basically, elevating her Mahadevi and Adiparashakti, you know. So basically, she was Sanskritized later on as time went on, or Puranized, you know, whatever words we use. So that is what her, but her earliest roots are Vamachara, Tantric, Kapalika related cultic practices, not Kapalika. But Kapalikas also worshipped Durga, you know, Bhairava and Durga. So later phase, as time went on, now what you see is she was, her temple rituals and liturgy are now, you know, practiced according to the Srividya tradition, Tripura Sundari, very popular south and as you know, and there is a Sri Chakra was established in front of the shrine. I showed last time the Sri Chakra. They say that Shankaracharya was established the Sri Chakra and actually, you know, introduced the Sri Vedya tradition into the Durga temple. So that is the Durga and our association, Tantric identities, you can see clearly. And meditating yogi with Durga. Very clearly she has so many identities, Tantric, Vamachara, and Kaula, maybe later on, but then Mahadevi, Devi Mahatmya, and then the Sri Vidya Tripura Sundari. For a long time I was thinking on the west face, you know, there were yogini figures, you know. There were 64 or 63 sometime when I counted correctly, or I don't know. I was confused myself. And I was always thought of comparing other yoginis, earlier yoginis. They were very wild, very sportive, very flying in the sky and all that. My yoginis are milder, like devis. I was confused, like why milder and, you know. So maybe they are not yoginis. But then I kind of read Shaman Hatley sometime talked. There was also changes did take place, like in the other traditions, did take place in the yogini cult also. Yogini cult also changed and yoginis became much more milder, you know. A transition did take place from the Tantra to Purana, Puranic kind of taking shape. Even Devi Purana called them not as yoginis, they are called as devis. So, like goddesses. So then I convinced, okay, by then this is a 15th century, you know, century, by then artist. But I have a clue there. Finally, this is a Machendra, Kaula cult or like Machendra related. You don't see on this, but they are here. Yogini figures and Machendranath. On the top frieze, you can see Machendra is bending always his usual posture, but he is seated on the fish. It's not very clear on the top. Can you see? On the top, on the, you know, the male figure. Yeah, the male figure sat on the fish, Machendranath. And on the right, a woman and dancing and all that kind of clue, you know, he is giving. And the bottom, all the goddesses or yoginis are associated with, you know, mostly like they look to me like Brahmanical female counterparts, Brahmani, like Saptamatrika, some of them are Saptamatrikas, you know. But Srishailam has a village goddess too, apart from all this, she is a Chamunda. Mm. You see, you can think of Srishailam's village goddess is Chamunda. Mm. So that tells us something, earliest roots, grassroots. Here you can see the Tantrics sat on the top frieze, and again, Yoginis association with the Tantrics. So something I finally convinced that there was Yogini Kaula cult was there. Now the fifth chapter. So all that happens and all the nine knots were initiated. I think I have to finish in 5 minutes. So leave the question for the time for questions. And now this is the time Menanatha says, I am going to the Himalayas. We accomplished this task. Summarizing in a colloquial way. And so now you have to go disperse to different regions, and they assign the regions. Goraksha goes to Gaula, Uttarakhand, try to find out Abira, Gujarat, Rajasthan, Bota, Himachal Pradesh, Lata, etc., etc. And Meghanath was sent to Kalinga, Orissa, Vanga, Bengal. And Buddhasiddha was sent to Maharashtra, Virupaksha, Karnataka. Kanika was Kanoj, Kashmir, Malava, and Konkana. Konkana is, I think, Goa, maybe near the Goa. Nagarjuna was Malayala, Kerala, Pandya, this is a lot, Chola, Tamil Nadu, Andhra, and Magadha, Central India. The reason why the Chaurangi is not there, can you guess? Chaurangi was not sent. Chaurangi says that Chaurangi actually, he thought he had a lot of faith when he was initiated, but he betrayed. He lost his guru's faith. He said, stay back and I'm going somewhere, Malava somewhere, and initiate Gopala. He has been serving you and me faithfully. Initiate into the order, teach him yoga, and he told, and he didn't do. And he didn't do, and he followed the guru where he went. And he says all kinds of excuses. And he got so mad, and he whole 2 pages Gaurana. Maybe Gaurana has a good source of. So, he got like Atma Santhapana, you know, he felt like he was that much loved Gopala, you know. So he comes back again, and he is the one who initiates Goraksha. And from that on, every time he asks Goraksha to initiate other new initiates. Anyway, Manjunatha was not there. And another one, who is not there? Six are there. Machendra, he goes to Himalayas and he settled down there and he's something, you know. And what happens is, in Gaurana, impressive things, I was impressed. And in that fifth chapter, he gives this Natha Sampradaya, diffusion of. And then they initiated, and Machendra gives very instructions how to behave with common people, how to behave with the kings, how to be local cowhead head boys. In such a way, instructions are given. And he asks, dress up differently, each one of you. All these instructions. So Gaurana might have a good source to, all these details, I don't know. Legends might have grown by that time. On the other hand, but then impressive things, he lists all the names of people who are initiated by them, by Goraksha, by Meghanatha, Buddha Siddha. A good list of, you know. So this is, that is impressive thing, I thought. So anyway, this whole chapter, I can write a whole chapter, I put it there just like that, you know. So this is a North religious culture, but I had to kind of place them, because long before North came to North tradition developed in Sri Shailam, there was a Siddha cult. We cannot ignore that, because there are temples of Siddheshwara built, from between 8th or 13th centuries around the Sri Shailam, if not at Sri Shailam, because many temples might have lost, during the period. So there are Siddheshwara temples dedicated to Shiva, and also Srishailam's southern gateway. Gateway means not literally gateway, but it is a place, gateway sthala. It has a sthala mahatmya. It's called Siddhavatam. I visited the place, There is a huge tree. There are graves of Siddhas, I was told. This is a very old place. It's located on the Pennar River, about 100 miles or little more than that from south of Sri Shailam. Earlier phase of temples are drowned in the sand dunes. The second phase of temples built like in 13th century, maybe 14th century, they are there. So Shiva is a Siddheshwara, and his queen is a consort, Ashtamaha Siddhi. So you can see that she is Ashtamaha Siddhi. She is the goddess of the one who gives Asta Siddhis, Maha Great Siddhis. Not only this one, but all four gateways around the Sri Shailam, like that, historical places, long history of Shaiva Shakta. That's why I called in my second lecture Shaiva Shakta Belt. This whole region, extraordinary archaeological resources. My goodness, it's amazing. We have literary sources for Siddha's practice, different kinds of, at Ghanta Mata, and there are so many cave sites on the hill. And Siddha connections with the Tamil Siddhas, sitters they have called, Maharashtra, Siddharamappa, story is there, Srishailam Association, and Karnataka, of course, mystic saints, Virashaiva mystic saints. This is the Ganta Mata, this is the oldest mata on the hill, and you see the interior, just barely standing. They spend money unnecessarily on some things, they should preserve these, you see. They spend unnecessary lighting, all these superficial things. But I was told that is the meditation room. How small that is, a room, you know. It's like, it looks like a cell, small. And there are some temples, small temples for, you know, Shiva. And so there is a story told, you know, I didn't dig in it, you know. That's why, you know, I tell you, when I started Srishailam, I didn't know what I was getting into. You know, I thought just to write religious history, all these reliefs are there, write one book and get out of the place. But no, it didn't happen. It kept me like 20 years almost. So this is a final slide. Okay, I'm done. So there is not only resident yogi groups, communities, you know, settled on the hill for some time, and there are traveling pilgrim yogis to Srishailam. There are rows of pilgrims, you know, different costumes, different way hairdresses, beards and these ornaments. I mean, anybody saw that they are carrying something on their shoulder, left shoulder? I couldn't figure it out. What is it? Anybody saw in the North India carrying that?
Yeah, on the stick, like a knapsack.
Oh, okay. I see. That's all? Nothing religious. Okay. That's about it. I skip a lot of techniques what they use, but it's no time.
We'll draw a brief close to the talk. Thank you very much. It's a wonderful image of an amazing place and this incredibly rich and complex history.
Really, real
window into the past. Let us thank you, and then we can take a moment for questions. We'll have
Sure.